Hi, it's Terry, and on this episode of No Crumbs Left Table Talk, I'm speaking to artist Heather Gentile Collins. It's a powerful story, and I want to give you a trigger warning because we jump right into it, and it's a story about traumatic loss and the places that it takes us. It's a special story, and I'm happy to share it with you today. I'm so delighted to have you on the podcast, Heather. Thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me, Terry.
What I love is that you are a crumble. You are a neighbor. We are, you know, friends of friends. And, you know, so many people told me about you. I mean, first of all, I saw your beautiful murals and all that wonderful things that you do. But, you know, people were like, oh, you guys really have to meet each other. So it's just kind of fun when you get to meet through friends of friends.
Absolutely. And it was like meeting a celebrity when I got to meet you in person, because same, I had heard about you and I had heard about you from people who didn't know you, who just were telling me to follow you. And I started following you, and I'm not a cook. I am not a great cook, nor is it one of my passions, but you have inspired it. And, you know, you're so much more than that. So I love the podcasts and your book and, you know, the bowls. Who makes the bowls, by the way?
A potter in the Midwest. We private label it. We, you know, found an amazing woman to work with, and we have a spectacular time, and we've got more than one working for us all in the same studio. So it's been a really exciting thing that has, you know, I never said I'm going to have a bowl business. It was just like, oh, let's make some extra bowls because people are going to want this bowl. And now it's like, you know, it's more than 108 different choices with different glazes and wow. colors. It's, and it is so much more, so much fun for me. You cannot imagine. So anyways, thanks for bringing that up. So yeah. I know you yourself are an artist. I know that you are, I mean, I think of you as kind of a bigger than life sort of person, and you do these amazing murals. And I also know that you are a person with an amazing sixth sense just from you know, talking to you. I don't know if you know, but I actually taught a class called The Psychic Pathway based on Sonia Choquette's the book, The Psychic Pathway. And I'm talking about, I don't know, my kids were little, you know, I'm talking about a long time ago, 15, 20 years ago, I taught a class based at 12 steps in her book. And anyway, she can imagine. She's an incredible healer and teacher, and has written, you know, like a dozen books. And so that's a little fun fact.
Yeah, I love that. You can tell that you have that sixth sense, absolutely, and that you use your intuition and everything. But I did not know that background about you. I love it.
It was weird. I had a dream about a friend of mine last night. And immediately when I got a call, there was something happened. And she was in the dream and like members of her family. And as soon as I woke up, I had a text from a family member, everything's fine, but something was up. And it was like, I knew immediately when I woke up, it was like, oh, something's up with this. So I think the truth is, you know, intuition to me is the voice of the soul, you know, just coming through. And I think that we all have it, you know, and that every single one of us is that. It's just that, you know, it's that sense of like, I should do this, or I should stop and get gas, or I should buy an extra sweet potato. It's all those little things that later on you're like, oh my gosh, there was a reason. And I trust mine, and I usually act on it. So anyways, there's some things you may not want to know. I want to hear a little bit about your story. You told me a bit about your story, about your mom, which touched the deepest part of who I am. So I'd love for you to share that.
Oh, thank you. I love that. You know, a friend told me that, you know, oh, you should talk to Terry and Terry might reach out to you. I really thought it was about, you know, about my art. And, you know, that's a comforting place for me to talk about. And then when we spoke, I was like, oh gosh, no, that, you know, I also use my intuition as well. And everything kept nudging me towards, no, that's not really what this is about. And that was kind of hard for me to grapple a little bit, because I do have a story. I think all my friends that know me well know my story. I'm always very open about my story, but I don't know that I've ever put it out there, you know, publicly or anything like that. So it definitely left me feeling really vulnerable and really questioning my comfort level with going there with you. But, you know, I see you as a safe place, Terry. So here we are. I grew up in the suburbs of Chicago and very pretty normal childhood. My mom definitely had a sixth sense about her, which everyone knew about her. And she was definitely a larger than life personality. She was always dressed to the nines. She was very creative. She was very artistic. People always said that, you know, they were very intimidated by her when she walked into a room. But then once they got to know her, she was the most down-to-earth, welcoming person that they knew. And when I was 15, my mom died in a car accident. And I was actually the driver. I was practicing for my driver's license. And I had just gotten my permit. You know, this has a whole nother level for me right now too, because I have a 16-year-old practicing to drive. So this is coming full circle for me for sure. Which I dreaded my whole life, sitting with my 16-year-old or 15-year-old practicing driving. But we had the whole family in the car. My dad was not in the car. I had all my siblings in the car. We had our dog in the car. We were heading up to Wisconsin, which we would do for the summer every year. And my mom, I had already practiced driving many times with my dad. And my mom thought like, oh, the rural roads would be a good place to practice. So she's like, yeah, I kept begging. I want to show you that I can drive. Okay, yeah, we'll do it when we get to Wisconsin. Well, we passed the state line and we were on some small country roads, and she agreed to let me drive. She stopped and got gas. She called her best friend and had from a payphone, because, you know, this is 1985. And called her from a payphone and told her how much she loved her and said, you know, I'll see you when you get here. They were meeting up. And I got behind the wheel and lost control of the car. There were people that, you know, reported that were behind me or around me that saw the accident. They said they don't know how it really happened. I was going 20 miles per hour and went to go roll down my window. It was, you know, on a crank wheel. And when you're not an experienced driver, you go back and forth real quick to yank and overcompensate with the wheel. And I flipped the car, hit a tree, and, you know, we were all very injured.
Wow.
Yeah.
Tell me more.
So my mom died instantly. I went through the glass. My arm did. I had 70 stitches. Luckily, the rest of us were not that injured, but we were stuck in the car for quite some time with, like, you know, they had to come and cut the car open to get us out. It was really big, severe, traumatic.
So traumatic.
Yeah. My little brother was 3. He was in a car seat. He was fine somehow. My sister had a lot of abdominal bruising. My brother broke his arm. And there we are. You know, I blacked out. Which I think helped maybe in some way. And then somehow we tried to pick up all the pieces and repair our life and go from there.
How many people in the family?
So I'm the oldest. My sister is a year and a half younger, and then another brother year and a half younger. So we're talking 15, 13, 12, and then baby brother 3 and a half.
And your father?
And my father, he was not in the car. We came to find out that my dad, he was very hard to get a hold of. We were in a hospital and we had no adult. People didn't have cell phones. They couldn't get a hold of my dad. We got a hold of my aunt, which was the one my mom called. She wasn't really my aunt. She was my mom's best friend. And I don't, my dad didn't come for hours and hours and hours. They had to eventually get someone, my aunt, to give permission to operate on us because they didn't have parent permission. And my dad was, he was Italian. Whatever that means to you and you imagine is probably accurate. He was a bit larger than life personality as well. And he wasn't always real connected with us kids and the family. He was, his business and his ego and his stuff was a lot of his priority. And so after she passed, we found out that she had filed for divorce, and none of us knew that. He didn't know that. But she had people, my aunt and her brother, my uncle, were helping her and had filed and had done the paperwork. And I think that was a big wake-up call for all of us. We knew that she wasn't happy, and we knew that... we knew that she wasn't happy, and we knew they fought a lot, but I don't know that we really knew that, you know, that was down the road. Now we're stuck with my dad, who we weren't that close with, who worked all the time, you know, and yeah, it was very, very difficult.
How many, you know, it's like, this is so unbelievable. So how long does it take to reach your dad?
I want to say, I think everyone's memory is different, right? But I want to say, you know, like 10 hours, something like that. Mm-hmm.
He comes to the hospital.
He came to the hospital. They had to eventually tell us that my mom had passed before he even got there.
Oh my gosh.
Because, you know, of course, we're all wanting her, asking for her. And we knew she was injured. We did not know she had passed. Mm-hmm. But we knew that she was unconscious. But then again, I was unconscious too. And so I just remember priests coming in. He didn't even have to say a word. We just all knew.
Yeah.
And there were a lot of really interesting, very amazing coincidences around it. My mom always wore a necklace that had a cross on it. My sister and my brother and my little brother were, you know, I don't know what they were doing to keep them busy. You know, some of us were, you know, literally getting stitches and bones repaired. But she was walking down the hall with my little brother in the hospital, and she found my mom's necklace.
Wow.
On the floor in the hospital. We still have it. It's, you know, it means a lot to us. There were a lot of little things like that, you know, where she had called her brother the day before and said, something's going to happen. I know something's going to happen. I don't know what it is. This is my Uncle Dick. Something's going to happen. I don't know what it is. I'm not afraid, but I just, something's going to happen. And, you know, my aunt thought it was very strange that she pulled over and called her from a cell phone or from a payphone and told her how much she loved her. You know, she was that person that just always said, you know, I'm not always going to be around. Your grandma, she's going to be around. She's going to live a long life. She'll be there. She'll be that old lady that's fun wearing gym shoes, playing with all you guys. I don't see myself being living here long on life. And, you know, I have a 16-year-old. I can't imagine telling my kids that.
Right.
But she was open about that. And it gave me kind of tools. She was very open about death. I'd ask her, you know, we used to watch Oprah all the time, the very first season. And she loved Oprah. And I'd always ask her, are you afraid of dying? And she'd always say, no, I'm really afraid of not doing my best while I'm here.
Right.
You know, I think that's all our biggest fears, right?
Right.
We'd talk about death, and she'd say, you know, don't go to where I'm buried. That's just where my bones are. It means nothing. look at photos, talk to me out loud. I do that all the time.
She kind of prepared you guys in some weird way. It was like she somehow, you know, she had some sense that this was her fate. And how, you know, how unbelievable as a mother, you know, to know that. And of course, you and I as mothers would say this to our kids if we believed that, right? I mean, absolutely. And what a, in a way, I mean, that is heartbreaking. And it was like, you know, in retrospect, it's an amazing gift that she said those things to you.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it was very concrete advice that we all stuck with and, you know, really prepared us for you know, what was ahead.
And what was ahead? What, I mean, what happened next?
Oh, goodness. So my dad tried hiring lots of nannies. We had a nun at one point. We had all kinds of nannies coming and going. My sister and I really cared for my little brother the most. Somehow I feel like I had a normal childhood. When I'm telling these stories, I can't believe I've lived them.
I'm going to have you hang on for 1 second, if you can believe it. We're going to stop right here, and I want to know more about that, and we're going to hear from our sponsor.
This podcast is brought to you by California Prunes, which, by the way, Lucy, I want to talk to you about them because you know that I'm crazy about them. They're kind of taking their name back because I think some people are thinking not a great thing to eat, and they're sweet and delicious and juicy, and I love when I'm doing Whole 30 to have my little baggie with five of them. Anyway, I love them. What do you think, Luce?
Well, honestly, if it weren't for you, I don't know that I would have discovered prunes. And recently you sent me and Cece, my girlfriend, like a million bags of prunes. And now I can't help but go into the cupboard every day around midday and have a couple prunes. They're such a fantastic snack. And I think we can make cookies with them. Am I right?
Oh, absolutely. Get to the blog, No Crumbs Left, and get our new recipe, chocolate chip oatmeal prune chip delicious.
Let's go.
I just want to say that we're back with Heather hearing this unbelievable story. So what did you do then? I mean, I cannot imagine having that happen. What did you do and how did you carry forward? Because I know that you guys stuck together.
We really stuck together. My little brother, Mike, really was the glue. You know, he was 3 and a half. I remember having to explain it all to him. I remember trying to give him a childhood. That kept us together. You know, when you're 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, you don't care about holidays. You don't want to come home every night for dinner. You think your friends are the whole world. But having that little brother, you know, wanting to give him a childhood and Santa and holidays and traditions and playing Legos and having dance parties, that kept us all together. We might have fought, you know, my sister and I, my brother and I, but when it came to our littlest brother, it was like we wanted to be a family unit. It was really a strong bond.
And so it was like you and your siblings. I mean, was it like your mom was your sort of guiding light, you know, in some way to sort of do that? Because it seems like your dad wasn't going to do that for you guys.
Absolutely. I mean, he made a lot of sacrifices. He was running a business. He hired a manager for the first time and said that, yeah, I'm not going to work weekends and I'm going to be home with my family for dinner every day. He made those sacrifices to try to figure it out, but it wasn't in his DNA. He didn't know how to love. He didn't know. He wasn't raised that way. It wasn't in his personality type. But, you know, my mom was there. My mom, every one of us have very vivid, I don't want to say apparitions, but like, you know, coincidences, stories where we feel like her spirit guided us or came to us or, you know, everyone has had her visit, a visit mm-hmm. from her, which is amazing and wonderful. And I feel her presence. If you want a teenager to behave in high school, you want your mom watching you at all times, right? I mean, I really thought my mom was right there around me all the time. So, you know, I was that kid who didn't drink till 21, followed every single rule. I mean, the weight of the world was on me because I had, you know, caused this car accident. I didn't want to make another mistake in my life. So I dotted my I's and crossed my T's for a very long time, very controlling and very much wanting to never make a mistake again. Somehow I didn't live with guilt. I really lived with thinking that my best friend in the whole world was with me all the time. Somehow I reframed it in my brain that it was a gift and really believed it.
Yeah. Because at that point, I mean, your childhood's done. You know, this thing has happened. It's a life-crushing moment, and either life crushes you, you know, and that's it, or you find some way to make it through. And what do you think, what got you through that? Because it's like you have amazing determination, and you're clearly a natural mother. And, you know, here's the thing, you're a person living a joyful life. So just how'd you get there?
I try to listen to my heart a lot. You know, when I was a kid, I called it the angel and the devil sitting on your shoulder, you know, like the cartoons where you know, I don't know if it was Tom and Jerry or what, where the devil would whisper something to you and the angel would whisper something to you. I was very aware that I had two different conflicting conversations in my head all the time. And, you know, whether that was divine or whether that was my heart versus my ego and my brain, I don't know. But I really used intuition, and whether that was, you know, my mom kind of tapping me on the shoulder. I love that saying that I think Oprah used to say it, that you can either listen when they tap you on the shoulder and God will keep tapping and it'll get louder and louder until if you don't listen, a piano falls on your head while you're walking down the street one day. I like to listen to that intuition the first time. I don't try to make sense of it at all. You know, I've heard the analogy with your cell phone. You know that when you press 7 digits or, you know, 9 digits, whatever, you're going to hear someone's voice on the other side. I never tried to figure out why my phone works or how my phone works. Science told me that's how it works. And there's the voice on the other side. I've used my intuition in that way, and I've just never questioned it. I don't know how it works. I don't know, is it God? Is it my guides? Is it my angels? Is it my mom? Is it spirits? I have no idea, but I do know that it works, and I do know that it guides me. And I like to joke with my husband all the time where I'll be like, hey, this happened. This came up in my memory. Let's see if it happens. And then the next day or later that night, go, guess what happened? So I like to kind of verbalize them so I don't think that I've just made this up in my head. Just like you said, when someone came to mind and then suddenly I knew I woke up, I had to get a hold of that person. Or, you know, there's lots of little taps on the shoulder. And I think that we all have that communication. That communication is available to all of us. It's reducing all the static and the rest of the noise in your life to hear it that helps you. I mean, I think having something as traumatic as that as a kid real quick tells you what's important and what's not important. You know, the four of us, money is not real important. Clothing, cars, all that stuff, not real important. We realized real early in life what our values are, what was important. And it somehow has served us all. And the people around us, you know, I still, you know, it's been a long time. It's been over 30 years. I still have 35 years. I still have people in my life who they tell me how much that changed their lives, losing my mom in their life, you know, living through that trauma of the car accident and the loss and the grief and all the healing that followed, you know, we're all better for it. And somehow all of us are wired to see it that way.
It's amazing. You know, my mother was one of those larger than life people. She's gone 20 years. I mean, and I'm lucky because I have so many people around me who knew her, you know, who still she carries forward. I'm a part of a mother-daughter group that I've been a part of since I was 8 years old. She was in a band for over 50 years. So these women are my extra mothers. You know, they're so much a part of my life. And I mean, that keeps my life wonderful because there's so many of us that remember her and know her and love her. And she shows up for me all the time. You know, she shows up. I feel like when she first died, because I missed the physical presence so much, it's different. But now I'm accustomed to the physical presence, you know, being gone. But she shows up for me in all kinds of, you know, miraculous and, you know, miracles. And my feeling is if you look for the signs, if you wait for the signs, if you expect the signs, if you invite them into your life, and my thing is like, Mom, you are welcome. You can come tap me in the middle of the night. You know, before she died, I said to her, let's have a symbol between us, you know, so that, you know, and what I said was like, when she was, you know, I've said this before on the podcast, but when she was well enough to say it, you know, so it's some months before she died, I said, what's really important to me is when you go, if it's possible to come on the edge of your world, you know, look for me there and I will come on the edge of my world and let's commit to finding each other in the edges. You know, I can't say that without crying. And so she said, okay, well, what should our telephone be? And I was like, ukulele, you know, because she was a ukulele player. She loved the ukulele. She collected ukuleles. And I said, let's have it be ukulele. And let's face it, you don't run into a ukulele every day, you know? So when on her birthday, Jake Shimabukuro is doing a ukulele concert, I feel like that's clearly my mother. You know, when I see ukes, when something happens, I just always feel like, you know, I'm having a little nudge. And my siblings and my nieces and nephews, we all really, really keep her alive. You know, it's like she's still the matriarch for us. She's gone 20 years and, you know, she's still in so many ways really our fearless leader. But I think how lucky you and I have been to love someone like that, you know, to love someone so much, to have that kind of love in your life. And I would rather have had my mom for, you know, 40 years than someone else's for much longer. Anyway,
that absolutely, you know, it's the amount of life you put in the years, not the amount of years you put in the life, right? And it's amazing how raw it can be after all these years. I usually speak very openly about it without, so I too got emotional on this call. So I welcome, you know, the authenticity of your emotion. It's powerful stuff. I did a healing circle with Barry. I know you know Barry also for memories with, her memory circle and
for those that don't know, Barry Liner Grant, we love Barry. She's an amazing woman and she has this Instagram, The Memory Circle. She loved her mother in the way that we loved ours. And she's always bringing her present in these magical ways. And she runs this memory circle. So it's like, definitely you want to check out Barry.
Yeah. And it's amazing because it brings people together. Some are totally new in their grief a month or so. And there you are with the 35-year-old trauma. But you, it's still just as relative and real. Time really is, you know, arbitrary. But I did have moments, you know, in that memory circle where I really physically felt her. And like you were saying about the ukulele, boy, how aware you were to ask for those signs. And I think some people feel really left out that their loved one is gone and they've never felt a sign. But I really love what you said about you have to voice it. You have to say, whether it's out loud, that you want those signs, that you are looking for those signs. And really just having a quiet moment and think about the essence of that person. You know, whether my mom's lucky number was number 3 and 333, you know, my siblings and I still find that number all the time. My credit card right now, the number on the back, the secret number, everyone, 333, you know, it's every time as it comes up in my life all the time. But you have to be open to looking for them and you have to really examine what is it that would remind me of that person? Is it a song? Is it a bird? Is it seeing a heart? I call them God winks. My friend Shannon Booth from House of Shan, her and I, we connect. You connect with different people in your life for different reasons. And her and I really connect over our mom's loss. And I said, you know, she was always finding hearts. And I said, that's called a God wink. It's a thing. It's when God winks at you to say, I see you, you see me. And just being aware and voicing what it is, as crazy it is a ukulele. Come on. How often does that come up, right?
And it does. That's the weird part.
Well, it's funny because Santa brought a ukulele to my kids years ago, and I think it got played with once. And I didn't have the heart to give it away. And it sat in my room because that's where everything goes to die, the purgatory closet. And it sat in my room. I just gave it away maybe last week, Wednesday. I donated it to my daughter's high school band. But I had a ukulele sitting at my bedside table until last Wednesday.
I love that. I think, you know, I know you and I have talked about this before, which is in telling our stories, it opens up to vulnerability. And I feel like even the way I introduced this today, I feel like, God, I was really missing a sensitivity chip not to introduce it with more sensitivity. And I think for people who've lost their mothers, we do have that where we can go into it and we can talk about it. So I apologize. I've been thinking that this whole time. But, you know, it puts us in a different world in a way, you know.
Something I go back to a lot is the saying is there's no fear when you're living in your purpose, right? I mean, I definitely was hesitant about this call. And I just kept thinking, you know, my story is one of my purposes. How else do you make sense of something as awful and traumatic as that? Is that you make it your purpose, right? And having that connection to her has given me connection to other people's stories and other people's loved ones that, you know, has given me a lot of purpose. If you don't have that purpose, you can be really lost in the what ifs and the fear of the real world, right? But if you believe that things happen for a reason and there's a purpose, and I love the analogy I go to all the time is that if you are living on Earth and you're seeing all these problems, it's very easy to get overwhelmed and you're wondering, why did my car die? Or why did this person pass away? Or why did I trip and break a bone? Or why did I lose my job? But if you can go to Google Earth and just zoom out, right, and see the big picture from up from above, our angels, our guides are seeing that big picture. They're seeing your authentic self, your higher self, the bigger plan. We can't see it from where we are. But if we can go to Google Earth and just zoom out, I think you see this beautiful patchwork pattern that's going to make the most beautiful story of your life. And everyone else's life and how we all fit together. It's this beautiful oriental rug pattern. But when you're down in it, you can't see the forest through the trees and the beautiful pattern and the reason it's being laid out the way it's being laid out. But if you have faith, really helps you to stay grounded and not question and not, you know, I like to say I'm a recovering control freak or recovering perfectionist, where I finally just had to realize none of this is in my control. And that's very freeing.
Yeah, it really is. You know, I think that's so profound. It's like this idea of, you know, zooming out on Google Earth, because I think we're living in times that are challenging. I don't know anyone that isn't, you know, going through a difficult time. And it is so stressful. And even just like, you know, being in quarantine, being on top of the people that you love at every moment. You know, I had a house burned down, you know, some unrest in my personal life, you know, things that could just drive you to drink, even if you already are a drinker. But, you know, to think of this idea that it's just like that we can zoom out is just, I don't know, I think that is so profound. And I think it's a beautiful solution. I know that you put some of this energy into your art. And I just want you to tell us for a minute, tell us about that. I know that you're sort of, you do these beautiful murals, and tell me about your art.
You know, my art, I always wanted to be an artist. I always could draw very well. I went to art school, but some people really set a path in their career. And I like to say I'm that little rowboat that's just kind of letting waves take me in this direction and take me in that direction. Cause I kind of feel like my art is just kind of my conduit to meet, communicate with people and build community, which you know, it's really what really drives me and gives me energy. But I do large scale murals for whether it's businesses or restaurants or public murals or schools. I do artwork on canvas that I sell in stores. I I do illustrations. I kind of get on these waves and do different things at different times, whatever's pulling me in whatever direction. I use my intuition a lot in that way to just be like, this right now I'm going in this direction. It's funny, right now we're, getting into the holiday season, and I kind of put everything down to make ornaments and paint Santa. And my friends who are fine artists are like, I can't believe you make ornaments. I'm like, oh, but ornaments make just, they make me so happy. They fill me with such joy. And I go back to, well, my mom made ornaments. I didn't think about that connection, but you know, she made and sold ornaments. But also ornaments just bring me joy. People give them as gifts. They use them as little time capsules for what went on that year. And when you put them up in your tree, you're reminded of the story of your life through all these little trinkets. So right now I'm knee deep in ornaments and painting huge, large scale Santas. It makes me so happy.
Isn't it good just to do things that are joyful? You know, sometimes just cooking, you know, working on a new wonderful soup, but it's just like putting my love into it and perfecting it. And it's just, it gets me lost in my joy. And whenever I'm feeling cooking fatigue, the idea of just making something for no one other than myself, and not thinking I have to create content and I have to put this out and what are you going to put on Pinterest? And I mean, you know, that can become a job, but it's like, how do we just access joy? And what are those little joys? I don't know if you saw the Friday favorites on What Is Your Dharma, but I mean, it's so interesting because that was 2 weeks ago, but it was like that idea. And I have always, I mean, when my kids were little, I felt like my dharma was being a mother. When my mother went off the planet, it was definitely helping my mother for those years off the planet. And none of this no crumbs left stuff happened for me until both my parents were dead, because so much of what I was doing was putting energy into them and sort of helping them. And I felt like that was meant to be for me. And, you know, all that energy that was left from that, you know, became no crumbs left, which I don't know. I think that's interesting. But for me, I feel like in many ways, my dharma right now, or what I meant to do, is I'm there for other women who've lost their mothers. When someone contacts me and, you know, it's like, you are going to get through this. This is sad and it's awful, you know, but you're going to be okay. And you're going to be birthed into a community of all kinds of people that you've never met. And they're going to love you, and they're going to give you love, and they are going to shepherd you through. So I always feel like in the, you know, like we have our work that we get paid for, and then we have our work that we do in the world. And for me, that work in the world is around motherless daughters, you know, and for some people, really, it's that they have a mother that isn't a mother, you know, because you can be a motherless daughter and your mother can be alive, you know, and for me, it's like, find that love and find women to mother you. I mean, Joanna, for my birthday, you know, is coming up and she's going to help me organize, you know, the cabin. You know, it's like, you know, so-and-so, you know, Fernanda made me a cake today and brought it. It's like, you get mothering, you can find mothering all over the world. People can be younger than you, older than you. And you can have men mother you. So it's like, find mothering. It's so important. It's, you know, and that's why it's really my dharma for me.
I love that you say that. I just had my 50th birthday in September, and, you know, we're in quarantine, and, you know, my sister-in-law, who's one of my best friends, she lived to 36. My mom lived to 39. My dad lived to 67. Not everybody gets to 50. So I was so proud to turn 50, and I was so excited to throw a party, and I parties weren't allowed. And I ended up going out on a boat ride with my 10 friends and I gave a speech on with a microphone that said, you are all here because you've mothered me. You and every one of them, I gave a little speech about how they mothered me. Some of them, you know, were the ones that helped me with my kids through elementary school. Some of the ones were the ones that were with me literally when my mom died. Some of them were the ones that held my hand through all my other losses. Some of the ones that have helped me creatively. They've all mothered me in so many ways. And I think as women, we can do that for each other. Not every friend is everything. I have my yoga friends. I have my artist friends. I have my spiritual medium friends. I have my business friends. I have the friends that I have kids, my kids' friends' mothers. That mother with me, we call each other the sister wives because we spend so much time together with our kids. It's really a powerful thing to have friendships like that. We're very, very grateful that we have that in our lives.
Makes a difference. Well, thank you so much for coming on today. This has been amazing. You are amazing. Your story is, and what you, what happened, you know, I mean, your story is heartbreaking, and I think in the beginning, that's why I was saying that way, is because where you took it, who you are, you know, what you did with that, you know, I admire it. I just think you're amazing. Tell me where people find you. Where are you on Instagram?
On Instagram at Heather Gentile Collins. This is the best place to find me. My art is there and you can connect with me.
Okay.
I appreciate your kind words. I really look up to everything you're doing, Terry, both with your talent and finding your joy with your cooking and sharing all these nuggets, all these truth bombs with us all the time through Friday Favorites and the podcast. I really enjoy the podcast. I listen to it on my headphones while I'm painting or doing my salt soak. So I appreciate this time getting to know you.
You too. And here's the thing. I don't know that I'm doing truth bombs. I think I don't know the answers as much as I'm asking the questions, and I like sharing my own life experience. And especially when, you know, there is that connection and we, you know, we get it, you know. So thanks everybody for being here. Thank you, Heather.
Thank you.
Come find me at No Crumbs Left on Instagram, on Facebook, on the blog, on Pinterest, and subscribe to the podcast. It's free, and we've got all kinds of great people coming this season. Thanks, everybody.